Earlier this month, on December 4th, Russia held parliamentary elections, and international observers quickly raised concerns about fraud and ballot stuffing by United Russia, Vladimir Putin's political party. Since then, a series of protests have been held, and both President Dmitry Medvedev and Prime Minister Putin have stood by the election results and dismissed any accusations of fraud. Joining me now for a look at how the events of the past 10 days are likely to shape Russia's upcoming presidential election is Stephen Sestanovich, who is the George F. Kennan Senior Fellow for Russian and Eurasian Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, and also the Catherine and Shelby Colum Davis Professor in the Practice of International Diplomacy at Columbia University. Welcome to today's first Backstory segment.
Thanks.
Over the weekend, tens of thousands of people gathered in Moscow, and there were small protests that also drew thousands of people in other Russian cities. Is this the first real challenge to Putin's authority in the 12 years that he's been in power?
He's had his tough moments, but he's had nothing like this kind of grassroots popular outpouring of opposition sentiment. And the opposition sentiment is motivated not just by anger at falsification, but it's energized by the surprisingly poor showing that Putin's party had in the elections. So people have this sense that, you know, with all the fraud, they couldn't even get a majority of the vote. That's made suddenly given people the sense that Putin may be vulnerable and his party may be vulnerable, and there's an opportunity to move Russian politics forward.
The protests began almost immediately after the elections were held on December 4th. Did the protests seem to take Russian officials by surprise?
They are always on the alert for even the smallest expression of opposition, so that over the past few years, even demonstrations of hundreds or a couple of thousand people would have the Moscow police out in huge numbers. What had to surprise them this time was that the numbers were much, much greater. It seems as though there were 40 or 50,000 people out last Saturday, with forecasts of, you know, many times that in 10 days. But in addition, it was the anger of it and the broad base of it. They're not seeing in the streets now just, you know, traditional activists, but lots of people who haven't been engaged in politics who are suddenly mobilized. And that's something that is disturbing to them because they don't know how far it can go.
But should we be surprised that despite the heavy police presence, as we've seen in other protests, the police have been remarkably restrained, more restrained than we've seen in some American cities?
They have obviously gotten the instructions from above that they don't want a confrontation with the crowds. If the Russian police are given the orders to be tough on the protesters, they're very, very tough. If they're not tough, it's because the calculation in the Kremlin is that maybe they can ride this out, have people let off steam a bit, and then it'll be over.
My guest is Stephen Sestanovich. We're talking about This Week in Russian Politics on Backstory. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. What has Prime Minister Putin said about this emerging protest movement? He spoke earlier today, didn't he?
He had one of his traditional call-in shows where he takes questions from the Internet, from phone callers, from an audience, for a couple of hours. He said a number of things about the protests, starting with that they were all under instructions from Hillary Clinton to get out into the streets. And
is that playing well in Russia? He said it before.
At the demonstrations, it became a kind of laugh line. People were, saying, how could anybody think that Hillary Clinton could get all of us out here on the square in the cold?
It is interesting that just 2.5 years ago, Secretary Clinton talked about resetting the U.S.-Russian relationship. So obviously that has stalled.
When Putin feels it's politically advantageous to charge his opponents with being tools of the West, it doesn't matter what Russian-American relations are like. He hauls out that line. It's a favorite one. He used it rather frequently in the parliamentary elections 4 years ago. But a lot of Russians figure, you know, the country's moved on, and while that might have been a kind of a zinger 4 years ago, it's fallen kind of flat this time. And a lot of people are using it as a sign that Putin is out of touch. Russian officials are saying privately, you know, they're a little embarrassed by that. It hasn't been repeated all that much, although Putin himself, you know, keeps suggesting it. The other thing he said is there's no need for any rerun of the election or any extensive investigation. Election returns, he says, reflect the sentiment in the country. And in that, he acknowledges that there's been a decline in his own party's support.
He said today that he was happy that young Russians had firm opinions, but then he added, but allowing yourselves to be pulled into some kind of scheme for destabilizing society is impermissible. Was he referring to Hillary Clinton there, that she had come up with some scheme?
You know, the general suggestion that there's a conspiracy by enemies of Russia can take in all kinds of of enemies, and Putin tends to lump not just foreign destabilizers, but anybody who is trying to, you know, send the country into a new tailspin.
He also got a little vulgar when he suggested that some of the protesters might have been paid and mocked the use of a white ribbon by some of them as looking like a condom being used for an AIDS demonstration.
You know, it's another example of Putin using old lines that have been kind of amusing to his constituencies in the past and seeing them not go over so well. Americans aren't so aware of this, but Putin is famous for vulgarity in Russian politics. He is somebody who has used street slang and obscenities to make himself seem like a man of the people. But I think he's off balance, and right now he's sort of not sure how to respond to this new challenge. And my guess is that particular line is going to be another example of it's going to provoke people to say, you know, he's lost it.
The Russian officials have been highly critical of the Arab Spring, and over the last week they've compared these Russian protests to the ones in Libya. Is that a way of preparing everyone for a crackdown?
It's a way of saying we don't want to go to a revolutionary upheaval. And there's a lot of that's a line that may actually have some force for Russians, because they think of the big demonstrations and the turmoil that brought down the Soviet Union as having produced you know, economic difficulties for them and political instability. So if Putin can say these are people who want to push us to a new era of instability and poverty, he may get somewhere. But I think even here, he's got a bit of a problem, because as in many other ways, the country has moved on. It feels more stable, more prosperous, and Putin doesn't seem even to people who thought of him as a positive force 5 years ago, perhaps, they don't think of him as the essential factor of stability anymore. That's his big obstacle. People think, why do we need this guy? And particularly, why do we need him back as president?
Now, there, like the Arab Spring and other protests, there have been video clips posted on the internet, and they show election fraud taking place. And that was one of the reasons the protests started. But Russian election authorities have dismissed those videos as fakes, and President Medvedev says that the videos show nothing. Well, I've seen a few of them. They definitely show something.
The Russian techniques of falsification are very well developed. They come in all forms, from the guys who get on the bus and drive down the highway and stop at every polling place and go in and cast votes. What's interesting to me is that there are some signs that the that Putin and Medvedev and the senior officials of this regime are a little nervous about whether the election commission will stand by it, whether it's going to be so easy to actually keep fraud going in as it may be necessary in the presidential elections in March. You know, the fact that they let the number go under 50% and didn't jack it up strikes me as a sign that they were nervous about giving that order.
Mikhail Gorbachev is among the people who have called for new elections, but earlier this week, President Medvedev said the newly elected parliament would convene for the first time next week.
And early. It could have convened in January. They decided to convene it December 21st.
Because they're sending a signal that the government will insist on the validity of the elections, regardless of what anyone says?
Absolutely. But the question is going to be, if there are hundreds of thousands of people in the street on December 24th, are you going to begin to have cracks in the unity of government officials, politicians in Moscow? The protesters on December 24th are debating right now what their demands are. Do they want the whole election run again? Do they want just an investigation of fraud? Do they want just another election in Moscow? And they're trying to decide what kind of demand would break the unity of the regime and make it most likely that they would be able to continue their political campaign.
Now, yesterday, go ahead.
The goal isn't simply to get a recount. It's to keep this mobilization, this popular activism going, because people in the streets and who've been in the opposition and those who are new to it suddenly have this sense that they've reached a political turning point, and they don't know how far they can take it. They're feeling their way. It's going to be a big sign to them what the size of the crowd is on December 24th. One of their senior organizers has said, you know, if we get a big crowd there on Christmas Eve, we will know that the country has changed. And if we only get a small crowd, then we'll know we don't even deserve to change.
Yesterday, Boris Gryzlov, the Speaker of the Lower House of Parliament, resigned that position. He was a major ally of Prime Minister Putin's, wasn't he?
He was a major helper of Putin's. I think he was definitely a secondary figure, but a leader of United Russia. And the fact that they would push him out the door right after the elections, before the new Duma is seated, was surely a surprise to him. And I think a sign to other parliamentary parties that perhaps the United Russia, and that's Putin's party, and Putin are prepared to bargain with them. You know, if the speakership is open, they could offer it to a politician not from United Russia, and as a kind of sign that they're listening to dissent and they're prepared to be flexible. So I think the Gryzlov sacrifice is a kind of offering, or perhaps an opening for negotiations with some of the parliamentary parties. But the parliamentary parties aren't Putin's worry right now. It's people in the streets.
Well, they are pushing back this week. Two journalists were fired after their publication, Kommersant Vlast, published coverage of the election fraud and laid the blame on Putin. So it's still dangerous. And just this last Monday, the billionaire Mikhail Prokhorov, who is the majority owner of the New Jersey Nets, announced that he would be running for president. When Mikhail Khodorkovsky went against Putin, he went up in prison. Is Mr. Prokhorov putting himself in any danger?
You know, going up against Putin is always a risky business, but I think the likelihood right now is that we're not going to see him clapped in irons and hauled off to prison. The debate in Russia right now is whether Prokhorov is a kind of fraud, a candidate controlled by the Kremlin who is being offered up as a sign that politics are changing. Some people think that. Others say, and I tend to lean in this direction, others say Prokhorov is an oligarch worth $18 billion, has gotten there by being on good terms with the Kremlin, but they've made him mad. They humiliated him earlier in the year when they arranged for him to be ousted as the head of a minor liberal party. And he seems to be mad. There is, I think, every reason right now to be open, at least, to the possibility that Prokhorov means what he says and is, running in earnest.
Now, this month marks the 20th anniversary of the disintegration of the Soviet Union. Can we just see this as part of the usual problems that occur when a country is making a transition from complete totalitarianism into something that we hope will be a real democracy?
Well, we've certainly seen this halting progress toward democracy and a lot of backward movement throughout the former Soviet Union. There are not a lot of countries in that lineup of 12 or 15 that you would call working democracies. The thing about Russia is that it was the center of political activism that brought down the Soviet Union, and there was a sense that Russia was the politically most progressive country in the former Soviet Union, a kind of pioneer of democracy. But Putin's time in office has rolled a lot of those expectations back. Russia has really ceased to be a pioneer, but now, and a lot of experts have been pointing to this as a possibility. Now you see the resurgence of some of that popular activism. We don't know whether it will be on the scale that it was 20 years ago, but there's a real atmosphere in Moscow now that this is their big chance.
Thank you so much for talking with us. Stephen Sestanovich is the George F. Kennan Senior Fellow for Russian and Eurasian Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and the Catherine and Shelby Colum Davis Professor in the Practice of International Diplomacy at Columbia University.
It's a pleasure.